call or that click that makes the difference. Won't you be in solidarity with WPFW this morning? Gregory, thank you so much. Getting us closer to the goal. Thank you very much. $560 now to go. We can do this together, folks. 800-222-9739. Keep the calls coming. Even as we move into what's at stake with Berna Avery Brown, the number is 800-222-9739. WPFWFM.org are the ways to connect. We still need $560 for Democracy Now, and we can do that together as we move to what's at stake with Berna Avery Brown. This is your station for Jazz and Justice, WPFW Washington.
Under his aggressive immigration policies, can Trump legally deport American citizens? One attorney says he cannot, but that doesn't mean he won't. And what to do if you're illegally approached by an ICE agent? Should you state your rights or keep your mouth shut? Stay with us. Good morning. Good morning and welcome to What's at Stake. I'm Verna Avery Brown. Well, the Israeli genocide in Gaza appears to be halted for the time being, but the consequences of Israel's actions have had an historic impact on American public opinion. For the first time in American history, the majority of Americans sympathize more with the Palestinians than the Israelis. According to a CNN poll, a major shift has taken place in the last 2 years. Israel lost the PR battle, losing 50% in support in public opinion polls. And while House Speaker Mike Johnson is preparing to collaborate with Israeli Knesset leaders to nominate Trump for the Nobel Peace Prize, next year, millions of Americans are organizing to dethrone Trump this weekend. This weekend, not next year, this weekend. Over 2,000 No Kings rallies in every state in America are scheduled for Saturday, from San Francisco to Chicago to Atlanta to Washington, D.C., and countless cities in between. Protesters will march peacefully to show their disdain for Trump and his policies, which they say overstep his executive authority and undermine the U.S. Constitution. The intended message: America is a democracy, not an autocracy, and we do not have kings. Donald Trump has called himself a king on his social media posts and said that Americans want a dictator. It's estimated that more than 5 million that turned out in June will protest this Saturday. Our first guest this morning on What's at Stake is a civil rights attorney who believes there are tools in place to check Trump's recklessness and disregard for the law. Attorney Augustus Corbett is a producer with the Defiant Lawyers Network. Welcome to What's at Stake, Attorney Corbett.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me.
Yes, indeed. You're joining us from Dallas. So are there any rallies taking place there in Dallas Saturday, to your knowledge?
I'm not sure, but whenever there is one of those No Kings marches, typically there are folks who will march here in Dallas as well.
Okay. Well, you know, I attended the No Kings rally in D.C. back in June, and conspicuously absent from the crowd were African-Americans. But, you know, that's just my humble non-scientific observation. As a civil rights attorney, have you analyzed what's happening in America through a racial lens?
Yes, we're dealing with, and again, thank you for having me.
We're
dealing with the immediate threat is Project 2025. Okay, that's the immediate threat, and with Trump's laser-like focus on his anti-DEI policies, folks in our community think that since DEI has been disproportionately advantageous for white women, that Trump's anti-DEI policies don't really impact us. That would be a mistake to think that way, because they're using those anti-DEI policies to go after civil rights. So that's the immediate issue. with our community, Project 2025, that 900-and-something page mandate, they call it, leadership mandate, I think they call it. I've read most of it, and it is horrible for African-Americans. Again, we're kind of targeted in many ways in that document, and with issues like fair housing, issues like civil rights. One thing that he did that is really problematic for us who practice in the civil rights area is getting rid of, at least on the federal level, disparate impact, a doctrine that we need to prove discriminatory intent quite often. And again, just a host of areas. We've seen already many African-Americans lose jobs as a result of DEI, disproportionately, I would say. So that's the immediate threat. And unfortunately, we got a little bit over 3 years remaining of this.
Mm-hmm. Well, so I know that in one of your podcasts, you say that the U.S. Constitution is one way to rein in Trump's fascist tendencies, yet it hasn't. I mean, U.S. Supreme Court Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson says the Trump administration is basically employing sort of a catch me if you can strategy. And in other words, he deliberately breaks the law and forces the courts to prove that he can't do it. How should we, or those forces that are opposed to Trump's policies, be taking on using the Constitution on their behalf?
Well, the problem has been the six conservatives on the court. The Constitution is there, but it seems like, it feels like, it looks like SCOTUS is a part of what I would call the conspiracy. The MAGA conspiracy. And they have, as Ketanji Brown Jackson has said, they have given him victory after victory after victory after victory, especially on the emergency docket, on the shadow docket. And so long as they continue to do that, then, I mean, he has that advantage. And that sort of brings me into another very, very important issue. And that is today actually, before SCOTUS, arguments are going to be made to protect Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act. And I go there because those folks on the court, those six conservatives on the court, are on the court because of voting habits. So what's the old phrase? Elections have consequences. One of the consequences, one of the biggest consequences of elections is that the president gets to appoint people to sit on that court. And the problem with us African Americans is we don't vote as much as we should. And so I said yesterday, last night actually, in a video that our channel put up, that African Americans did not protect or did not vote to protect the Voting Rights Act. And I say that because in 2016, when Trump was elected, a big reason for that is the fact that only 59.6% of African Americans voted. And many, I would say, voted for Trump, and others just didn't vote. And so as a result of that, Trump won, and he literally thanked the African-American community for either voting for him or for not voting for Hillary. So what happened as a result of that? And we all remember Trump asking us, what do you have to lose voting for him? Mm-hmm. Well, as a result, let me just say this one last thing.
Sure, I'm sorry.
As a result of Trump getting in office, we ended up with Brett Kavanaugh. We ended up with Amy Comey Barrett. And we ended up with Neil Gorsuch. three really conservative justices on SCOTUS, and those three make up that six. And again, with the Voting Rights Act, there's a very good chance that those three will vote with Clarence Thomas, who is leading this effort to get rid of Section 2, to actually get rid of Section 2.
This case today before the Supreme Court, what's at stake there?
Oh, so much. So very much. Back in 2013, SCOTUS handed down Shelby County versus Holder, which is a case that basically invalidated Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act, which required preclearance, which means that before certain states in the South could make changes to their voting laws, they had to get preclearance. They had to get preapproval from the Justice Department. Well, Shelby County got rid of that requirement, and now states can do essentially whatever they want to do. So that really opened the door to a whole lot more voter suppression. We're not talking about poll taxes or literacy tests like in the 50s and 40s and 30s and so on. We're talking about other style voter suppression laws. Mm-hmm. But there is a remaining section of the Voting Rights Act, Section 2, which we tend to use to fight racial gerrymandering, the very type of stuff that is happening here in the state of Texas. And so if they get rid of Section 2, then it will be much, much harder to fight racial gerrymandering. And also, there are some members of Congress now whose districts came about as a result of gerrymandering. I'm predicting that if Section 2 is gone, that even those districts, I think they may try to retroactively go back and get rid of any of those districts that came about as a result of Section 2. So there is a lot at stake. Mm-hmm. This will basically finish sort of gutting the Voting Rights Act. We'll still have it, but its effectiveness, its enforcement will be seriously curtailed if the five other members of SCOTUS, five other conservative members go along with Clarence Thomas, who has been trying to kill this thing now for about 30 years.
Hmm. Well, so Attorney Corbett, U.S. Representative Jasmine Crockett, who is in Texas, a representative.
My representative, by the way.
Oh, your representative, okay. And considered a rising star in the Democratic Party. And it's predicted that the gerrymandering may actually affect her seat in Congress.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Not only hers in this area, in the DFW, Northern Texas area, but another African-American congressperson, Mark Vesey. And so basically what the new map does is it takes away Mark Vesey's part of his district over in Tarrant County, which has a lot of Latinos, and it's where he's actually from, born and raised. And it sort of packs his new district in with Jasmine Crockett. So that's what racial gerrymandering does. It cracks black voting districts and then pack black voting districts so as to dilute or weaken our voting power.
Mm. So you call it racial gerrymandering. That's not a phrase we normally hear, but you're saying the gerrymandering process that we're all familiar with is actual racial gerrymandering. So, yes. You know, I'm sorry. Many progressives have grown weary of the two-party system and believe that voting for a Democrat is not going to alter the system to work in the best interests of black, brown, and economically challenged voters. And indeed, the voting machines and apparatus have come under intense suspicion since the likes of Elon Musk and voter suppression tactics. So what do you say to that? I mean, people are losing faith in the two-party system.
Well, to the issue of the Democratic Party voting for the Democratic or the GOP party, I think it's pretty clear who has It may not be clear for folks who are not, who don't know and haven't studied the history of politics in our country, but for those of us who have and must, it is pretty clear that in this particular time of American history or African-American history, the party that is best for the African-American community is the Democratic Party. And I say that, and I'm not a Democrat. Okay. I'm not a Democrat. I'm not a Republican either. I'm an independent voter and have been for about 20 years. Mm-hmm. But I know the history. I know the Democratic Party at one time was the slave propagating party, if you will. And the GOP, the Republican Party, the so-called back then Party of Lincoln, was the party that brought about or helped facilitate the end of slavery, and the radical Republicans who were a part of the Republican Party back then, the 13th, 14th, 15th Amendments, the early Civil Rights Act, all of that was done by the Republican Party. So blacks, most blacks back then were Republicans. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But a big change happened, a big change from the 40s up through about the 80s. The so-called Southern Strategy, Trent Lott, former, we all remember Trent Lott, former Senate leader, said at the end of that Southern Strategy that it had been so successful that the GOP had become the party of Jefferson Davis. Mm-hmm. And they have been opposed to every initiative for black Americans. I'm talking about the GOP. From not just the Southern Strategy, but as far back really as right after slavery, when Rutherford B. Hayes signed that compromise, they have been either indifferent or opposed to African American progress since then. And as we know, the Democratic Party gave us the Voting Rights Act. It gave us the Civil Rights Act, it gave us the Fair Housing Act, it gave us the Higher Education Act, it gave us so many things that we still rely on today. And unfortunately, because of what you just said, I believe, the confusion about who we need to be voting for, we're about to lose a lot of that stuff.
Well, I want to switch gears just a little bit. Some people have asked if Trump can deport African-American citizens. And I know you had a position on that. Your response to that?
No, not legally, not lawfully. And the caveat there being African-American citizens, right? Citizens. And that's because of birthright citizenship. And I'm not an immigration attorney. I think my colleague is an immigration attorney, so I will defer to him on this. But no, not legally, so long as African Americans are citizens born here or naturalized. But the question is, I put some content up on social media. The question is not whether or not he can legally deport African Americans. The question is whether or not he will in some way bypass the law, bypass the Constitution, and try to do so. I mean, that's the question that I was answering there, because, you know, there are a whole lot of, like you said, I agree with you that there are a whole lot of blacks who are sitting out this thing and, you know, kind of dancing through it, kind of putting their boots down through it. And so there are a lot of African Americans who I don't know how to say it, but who don't think what is happening right now is really going to directly impact us. And it already is big time, disproportionately more so, or at least as much as other communities. And that is the result of a lot of disinformation. You got a lot of disinformation on social media that tells black folks all sorts of stuff, and it has more influence than what we hear on a lot of main media.
Okay. Thank you, civil rights attorney, the Reverend Augustus Corbett, producer of the Defiant Lawyers Network.
Well, I do the videos.
The host.
Thank you.
Okay. Yes, and thank you so much for being our guest this morning.
Thank you.
We're going to take a break now and pay some bills. And when we come back, we're joined by immigration attorney Joseph Farr, and we're going to drill down on your rights and the wrongs of the ICE and National Guard practices, what you should do and what you shouldn't do if approached by an ICE agent. But first, this is our fall pledge drive, and this is your opportunity, listeners, to make your contribution to WPFW and specifically to What's at Stake. Each program is given a goal to reach so that we all contribute to the whole and raise the necessary funds to keep our beloved station afloat. My goal this morning is $300, and I need your help to make that. And joining me in the studio is our esteemed program director, Katia Stitt. All the amazing specials and programming you hear on the air is the result of her brilliance and talent. Good morning, Katia.
Oh, good morning, Verna. What a glowing introduction.
Well, it's true. It's true. And listeners are still raving about the awesome day of programming on Gaza that you produced last week.
Well, you know, Verna, I think that what we do on the air, what we put together, is a reflection of how we feel and how we walk in the world and the work we do outside of WPFW. And certainly What's at Stake and your brilliance and your talent is no exception to that. We know that you are an activist off the air. You are a brilliant journalist, and you bring all of that, not only to what you do specifically when you're hosting, but to the collective of journalists that you have amassed for What's at Stake. And so we ask people now to go to the phones and pledge your support. Now, Verna, you did say $300. I'm looking at six, but you know,
okay.
We'll take three. We'll take six. We'll take whatever folks have in their hearts and their wallets to give. That's the important thing, right? You know, that we make this goal together, folks. You hear that we are a community, Verna. And we are not just program and program director. We are friends. We are colleagues. We are comrades. And that is the case throughout the grid at WPFW. That is how we see each other and the way we relate to each other. And that is also the way we relate to you. We consider you friends, colleagues, and comrades doing this good work with us.
Uh-oh,
because
we lost. Okay.
Because, in fact, you are an activist. When you pledge to WPFW, when you support What's at Stake, you are also becoming a friend, a colleague, a comrade, and helping us do this good work. So please support Verna Avery Brown this morning. That was a wonderful interview, asking the questions that are on many of our minds today in terms of how what we see in the streets, the kidnappings, et cetera, how it affects us, and learning about a new podcast, The Defiant Lawyers, you know, always educating, always inspiring, always helping us to distill and discern what we are seeing happening, and the journalistic integrity also, we have to talk about that Verna brings to What's at Stake is unmatched. And we know that you understand that because you support WPFW. And right now, someone just heard the clarion call. Verna, we want to thank Gregory out of D.C. Thank you so much for getting us started.
Gregory.
So we have $500 to go to What's at Stake. If I can just take a moment, we want to thank a friend, a new member out of McLean, Virginia, who pledged on Democracy Now! And we want to thank a friend out of Reston, Virginia, who also did the same. So we want you to follow Gregory's footsteps right now and keep us going.
Thank you, Gregory.
And exceed this goal. We have $500 to go, but we can do so much more. Many hands do make light work. 800. Go ahead, Verna.
Well, I was just going to say 202-588-9739. That's the number to call. That's one number to call. Or you can use the Cash App, which is the $ WPFWFM. You can also go online to WPFWFM.org and make your generous contribution. Katia has informed me that our goal is twice as much as I thought it was. So we're going to need you all to be twice as generous.
That's right. Twice as vigilant. Twice as vigilant. So, that's right.
and generous as well. So we appreciate the calls that have come in so far. I just want to remind listeners of some of the programming that What's at Stake has done. You know, we definitely try to do our part to keep you informed. We had the guy, Les Parnes, joined us
a couple of months ago.
And he gave us the tell-all about the Hunter Biden scandal and the MAGA cult and why we won't be having fair elections this time. We also did a piece back in September on the fact that the math is not mathing in Rockland County, where a Democratic senator won decisively in 2024, but Kamala Harris got zero votes. So one of those things that make you go, And so we had a complete segment on that. We also did something on, we had author Charlotte Dinette, who says that if you want to really know what's fueling the genocide or what was fueling the genocide in Gaza, just follow the pipelines. She lays it all out in her book. And we're going to have her back because I want to hear more about the fact that this so-called peace, well, this ceasefire has is really about Trump getting control of the oil off the coast of Gaza. And we're not hearing very much said about that. But you can stay tuned to What's at Stake, and you will hear that. But we need you right now, if you support what we're doing, to go to your phones and make a contribution. We really need you. 202-588-9739. 202-588-9739. Whatever you your heart inclines you to give. Every little bit helps. Every great bit helps. I know there's some of you out there who are doing well. You could probably cover the whole balance of 500 for us, and we would sincerely appreciate that.
That's right. But, you know, they can also become sustainers. So if $22.50 is in your monthly budget to give, if we have three folks stepping up at that level right now, we will exceed the goal. So, again, the other number you can call is 800-222-9739, and again, 202-588-9739, or you can go online to WPFWFM.org. And nothing delights us more than when we see the blue tally screen click and new pledges come in, and we know we have new members of the family. 800-222-9739. Think about that sustaining membership or WPFWFM.org or become a new. The other thing is new members. Verna, we know there are folks out there listening who have not yet crossed the burning sands, as they say in the fraternity and sorority pledging. So please,
now is the time. Join our family. Join our WPFW. It's a very distinguished membership to be in, a very elite group of people. Elite meaning that they're politically astute and they want to be a part of the solution, not the problem.
Absolutely. And WPFW is part of the solution, you know, in terms of pushing back and resisting what we see by bringing you the information, the education we're about to hear about what are our rights. In this moment, so very important, this information getting out there. And that is WPFW's service. So 800-222-9739 or WPFWFM.org.
Please go to your phones. Thank you, Katia. Thank you.
Absolutely. We'll thank other people on the other side.
Yes, yes, indeed. So you're listening to What's at Stake. I'm Verna Avery Brown. Posters and speeches at the No Kings rally this Saturday are sure to blast the Trump administration's aggressive and unlawful immigration policies and practices. Joining us now in our virtual studio is Joseph Faw of the Faw Law Group. He has practiced immigration and employment litigation and personal injuries throughout his career. Welcome to What's at Stake, Attorney Faw. Thank you for joining us this morning.
Good morning, and thank you for having me.
So let's pick up where we kind of left off that last segment. If you're an American citizen born and raised in the USA and an ICE agent approaches you seeking to possibly arrest you or question you, how should you respond?
I'd say it's not just for a US citizen, for any citizen for that matter. When you're approached by a police officer, As we know, ICE agents are officers. They have the power to arrest you. You probably want to identify yourself. If you are a U.S. born citizen, I am a U.S. citizen. If you have a passport on you or your passport card, that would be best to show that you are a U.S. citizen. They probably leave you alone. If after showing your ID card and they don't leave you alone and they continue to ask you more questions, at that time, I would probably say it's wise to exercise your Fifth Amendment right to remain silent or and ask to speak to an attorney. You don't have to answer any more questions after that. One of the things that I tend to see is that usually people want to engage in conversation or back and forth with the police. And whatever you said can be used against you, or sometimes you end up in handcuffs and it's not really in your advantage. So my recommendation is if you are approached with an ICE agent or any police officer for that matter, given that there are a bunch of MOUs between different agencies, you go into a military base to do a food delivery and then you end up in an ICE van, right? So if you get approached by any police officer, if you're a U.S. citizen, tell them you are a U.S. citizen, even if you can't prove it. But make sure you are a U.S. citizen when you say you are a U.S. citizen. You can't be an immigrant and say you're a U.S. citizen when you're not a U.S. citizen. Now, if you're a natural citizen, then that's true.
It sounds like we've entered a stage or a phase like South Africa under apartheid. We have to carry our documents around with us. We have to actually be able to prove without a doubt that we're a U.S. citizen. Is that what you're saying?
Unfortunately, I have to admit that that is true today. And it's disappointing to say it. And I'll take it a little bit further to say that one of my worker, a paralegal in my office, born in the U.S., probably never even traveled outside of the U.S., was told by, unfortunately, another Black person to go back to his country because he looked Hispanic, or she looked Hispanic. And a lot of the arrests that are being made in D.C. today, they have checkpoints. And if you look like you don't belong, if you look brown or Black, then you get to ask to show your ID. And there are further checks that are to be done in the systems. If you go past the check, if nothing comes out on you, then you're free to go. But I think presumably that's illegal. But again, we are at a time in the U.S. where law doesn't really mean anything anymore. We are at a time in the U.S. where the rules of law means nothing. It's really hard for attorneys to give any legal advice that would stand. We just hope that people are more careful today. And that's just my general sentiment, and that's just me.
So people don't normally carry their birth certificate around with them, but you're suggesting that now at this point, maybe a passport or something that will prove definitively your citizenship while you're driving. I guess now even when you're walking, because it seems like walking while Black can be a crime.
I would say yes. Walking while Black or brown is always a problem, not just with ICE. It has been a problem in this country for many years. But what I would say to everybody, not just immigrants, is that if you have a way to get a passport card, please have it with you. Now, if you don't have your passport card, I understand birth certificates are a little hard to walk around. You have to make it sure that it's not wet, it's not wrinkled. I think it's something precious to keep away. Same with your certificate of naturalization or certificate of citizenship. It's a document that is expensive, and I don't think people just walked around with that document. So my recommendation is if you could have a passport card, then please keep it in your wallet. It's just the same size as an ID. I think passport itself is a little bit hard. It's hard to carry just because of the size. And also it's easier to get lost. But if you have a passport card, you could slide it in your wallet. If you don't have it, at least have your driver license with you, because your driver license, at least if you are in Maryland, would tell an ICE agent whether or not you're allowed to stay in the U.S. Because on your driver license, there are some restrictions that federal agents that are trained would know whether you are allowed to stay or not. And if you don't have any and you believe that you're a U.S. citizen, say so when you are approached by ICE agent, and that's the most you're going to say.
So now, if you said that's the most you're going to say, don't get into a whole thing about my rights. I know my rights and you can't do this to me, etc.
For many reasons, and not just related to immigration, it's just the way that you would do when you meet an officer. Your goal is to de-escalate the situation, not escalate the situation. First of all, the way you look is already a problem. So don't add more to it. You don't get approached when you have brown hair and blue eyes, or blonde hair with blue eyes. You just get approached when you look brown or black most of the time. So I don't think arguing with an officer would help you. It's probably going to lead you to end up in handcuffs.
So if the officer is using excessive force, and we've been taught to take their badge number, but suppose their badge is covered up, because a lot of these ICE agents, I don't know, it seems like their faces are covered. I don't know if their badges are covered as well. What do you suggest in a situation like that?
Well, unfortunately, we're in at a time where you're not sure who's arresting you, but I would say a lot of kidnapping happening in the streets, people are there taking videos. And if you are being picked up by ICE agent, they certainly would take you at a location. And then when they're taking you at an ICE detention facility, we know exactly who brought you at a detention facility. We know when you came in. I think the record can easily be traceable. Even if you cannot identify the actual officer by name, you at least, at the very least, know who brought you in when you came in. And if you have to file a complaint, the government is required to keep the records, and you don't even have to file a lawsuit. There is a process called FOIA, a Freedom of Information Act request, that you could certainly do to get the name of the officer involved.
So what about you, if you are the one witnessing an improper or overly aggressive arrest and are filming it? Can the agents lawfully take your phone? I know sometimes police or any of the National Guard or the police officers, they get real nervous when they see you filming. And I have heard of occasions where they have taken the phone. Can they do that lawfully? And how should you react?
It's not that lawfully. This is just pure abuse of authority. So if the officer is arresting somebody, my position as a U.S. as a citizen or as a bystander, I cannot interfere. I cannot do anything to impede the officer's ability to arrest a citizen. I don't care. Or it doesn't matter whether I agree with the officer's reasoning. It doesn't matter if I agree with the strategy being used or the kind of restraint being used, whether it's a chuck hold. All I could do is film and stay away from getting involved in the process, because the moment you get involved in the process, it's no longer just about the person being arrested. It becomes you being a problem. You can be charged with obstruction of justice. You can be charged with all kinds of stuff. So I don't think the officer, if you're standing 100 feet away filming it, would have a problem with that. I think they get nervous when you get too close to them in a way that this scene no longer becomes secure to them. And that's when people tend to get the most in trouble. But filming from a distance would never get you in trouble.
So I know the vast majority of people the ICE agents are pursuing are Latinos, but is it unrealistic, Attorney Faw, to fear that other ethnic groups, say African-Americans, should be concerned that they may be targeted as well? Is that hyperbole, or is that a genuine concern, do you think?
It is a genuine concern, and I don't even think only immigrants are getting arrested. I think we've got plenty of cases of U.S. citizens getting arrested. And as it turns out, this is an actual U.S. citizen, and they can't just be let go without being charged. It's like, well, you were obstructing. You were interfering. So they have to find a way to charge them with some kinds of crime. And at that point, I don't think it's just brown people or Hispanic people. Anybody is at risk. But predominantly, you have black and brown people being targeted by ICE agents.
A lot of people of color, not Latinos, are sort of, as we discussed in the last segment, kind of, you know, laying back on this, participating in these marches, etc. They feel like this is not our battle. This is not our issue. Your thoughts about that?
I think the concern today, and it's not just about protesting, including in the legal profession today, is can you really sign a brief that is challenging the government actions without being afraid that the government is going to come after you and charge you with some kind of crime? Can you really go after the current executive branch without being afraid of the government looking into your stuff to see if they can find something to charge you with? I think that's where most, at least from my view, people are concerned. People are afraid of repercussions of taking part of mass protests. If they film me, they see me, I am an immigrant, they probably visit my family. You may have legal status, but your family may not have legal status. If you go against the government, if you go against the president today, what happened to you? If you're a student just doing normal free speech protests on campus, you started today by talking about Palestinians. If you support Palestinians today as an immigrant, what happened to you? Ask Kilmer Abrego. Ask the folks up in New York, people that are here lawfully, just taking part of normal protest, can end up caught up in immigration raids, getting deported. So people are very much afraid. So I can understand why people don't want to take a stance. And that's exactly what the government wanted. The chilling effect has made its place. People are now scared. And then the kingdom can now, you know, open up the door to the king.
I guess there should be other ways that people can actually help to resist if they're concerned about this. So what's the most common infraction that ICE agents are making, Attorney Farr? And will they have to be held accountable for those actions eventually?
I suspect, just based on personally on a number of videos that I've seen myself, nobody is being arrested the way they should. You're getting a lot of excessive force being used. And my suspicion is that there will be a lot of civil rights lawsuits being made, Section 1983 civil rights suits, excessive abuse, excessive force being made. Once this government, there's a transition into a new government, I'm sure there'll be a lot of lawsuits. People are getting hurt during these arrests. And there was recently this thing, it's called a wrap. People are being wrapped in the airplane. It's a new restraint system where your feet and your hands are just in the bag and you stay in the same position all the way to your destination. If you're getting deported to Guatemala or Salvador, then you don't have the right to move your feet. And I think certain human rights violations are also being raised in this deportation flights. So I suspect that once there is a new government, or at least when the Justice Department is able to prosecute some of this claim, plenty of them are going to be brought. Of course, we know right now, based on how the government is doing things, that it's unlikely that you can have DOJ agree with your lawsuit.
So I know that you handle employment litigation, and over 300,000 African-American women have lost their jobs under this Trump administration. Is that disproportionate in comparison to whites, Latinos, Asians, Native Americans? And is that a violation of their civil rights? And do they have a legal recourse?
So I don't know. I would say that it's disproportionate. I don't think the government is out there looking just trying to get rid of black folks or trying to get rid of brown folks. It just happened to be that some of the positions that are being eliminated are predominantly held by brown or black folks. So I think they're getting rid of the position. I don't think the government can be charged, in my view, at this point with systemic racism by the way they're doing things. The government may be violating some of the labor laws. I'm not following unions, not listening to the process, all those things. But I don't know if I can bring a discrimination claim per se, just based on the way the government is doing things. But certainly union violations, labor law violation, and all those things, I would agree with that.
Well, if they use the DEI, the anti-DEI, as a basis for their reason for firing people, doesn't that speak volumes about racism or discrimination?
Anti-DEI policies, yes, I agree. If you're looking at minorities, getting rid of minorities just because of, and not really how well they perform in certain positions. But again, a lot of these people are just at the discretion of the president, right? So let's get rid of this person. Let's get rid of that person. And if they're not being replaced, if you have to look at Title VII per se, which is the statute that dealt with discriminations, if you focus on Title VII, It's not just enough to say that you were fired because you were black or because you were a minority. It's who else was fired, who was not fired. That is not in your protected class. What else did that person that is not within your protected class did that is far worse than you did? I think if you have to assert the claim under Title VII based on the termination on the DEI policy, I don't know how likely you are to survive the case in court. But I think the challenge here would be to really prove discrimination because of the race. Yes, the government has its priorities, and the court has already said, yes, the government this can do this. The Supreme Court today has approved a lot of this firing, and I don't know where else you would get support if not from the Supreme Court. So when they bless these terminations that are presumably unlawful, I don't know where else you can get support. So I think it's going to be a challenge to bring the civil rights suits, or at least to bring race discrimination cases based on the DEI policies or anti-DEI policies.
Wow.
I think I find it challenging.
Okay. Immigration attorney Joseph Fogg, the Fogg Law Group, thank you so much for joining us this morning on What's at Stake, attorney.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Joining me again in the virtual studio is Program Director Katia Stitt. Welcome, Katia.
Thank you so much, Verna. I'm happy to be here, and I'm happy to report that someone else has joined Gregory in supporting What's at Stake. We want to thank Jim out of Silver Spring, Maryland. Thank you so much, Jim.
Thank you. Your
generous support. $400 to go, folks. 14 minutes to do it. Freedom is not free. And we keep us safe. These are all the things we must remember in this moment. And you keep WPFW and What's at Stake safe through your donations. We ask that you be in solidarity with us now. $400, 14 minutes. You can call 800-222-9739, or you can go online to WPFWFM.org. I think I can speak for Verna and myself to say that we would be beyond thrilled to thank you.
Absolutely.
Before the end of this hour.
Yes, indeed. We certainly do want you to go to that phone. I mean, we've got to make our goal, folks, and you're the reason that we're going to make it. And, you know, there's so many reasons to support this radio station and specifically What's at Stake. We work hard every week. We have a whole host of guest hosts that join us. We have Dr. Marcia Coleman Adebayo, who is one of our What's at Stake hosts. She is a fierce activist, and she's doing some tremendous historical work around the grave sites that have been desecrated in Maryland. We also have Professor Fahima Sek, who constantly brings us interesting, creative stories and programs when she visited, when she hosts once a month. We had the former retired judge, Robert Gordon, who joined us from time to time as a guest host. And we now have Kimon Freeman, who is joining us in our staff on our collaboration as well. That's not the word I'm looking for. In our coalition. Help me out here.
Collective.
There we go. I knew it was
a
coalition.
But it is a coalition.
Yes, you know. Indeed. Kimon Freeman, who is the ultimate activist. So please support this program and let everybody know that we realize how important it is to keep WPFW and What's at Stake. Right now, we have to meet our goal. We need you to go to the phones and make that call. 202-588-9739. Or go to the website and do WPFWFM.org. Now, if you have Cash App, you can use that as well. $ WPFWFM. Make a contribution. We can't go out like this. Now, we need your contributions this morning. Go ahead, Katia.
I was just going to say, and What's at Stake does such fine work for us, no matter the host. You know, and of course, again, Verna Avery Brown as executive producer, pulling it all together. But this is a program that we rely on. It is indeed appointment listening for many. And if you are in that number or you're just discovering it today for the first time, the program this morning has been chock full of information, practical information that we can use to keep us all safe. Mm-hmm. Exactly. 800-222-9739, $400 to go. We have 11 minutes to do it before the top of the hour, although you can continue to call and pledge for What's at Stake after 10 a.m. But we'd like to see the numbers tick up today and make that goal for Verna Avery Brown and the excellent work that she does. The number again, 800-222-9739, WPFWFM.org. And
you know, go ahead, giving may be a challenge for some, and for others, it's the perfect opportunity to contribute to the WPFW community. And as we said earlier, become a member of our family. It's a very unique and elite family to be a part of. Well, what's the cost to become a member, Fatia?
Well, it's still, you know, membership in terms of voting rights, I believe, is still $25. And I have to state that because we're part of Pacifica. But we've always said membership is at $35, and that has been for decades now. So we started $35. But, you know, we also know, Verna, that there's so many people out there that are blessed and can do so much more. And when you do so much more, when someone takes up the entire $400 that we still have left, you're doing something not only great for yourself, but something even greater and more important for the community that you live in. You are serving the community in that way. And it's so very important. Mutual aid, you know, we throw that term around. But WPFW, making sure that WPFW is here when you have means, is an act of mutual aid. Think about it like this, because there are so many people that needed to hear that last interview, for instance, about how to keep themselves safe, their loved ones safe, what to do if you're stopped, etc., that cannot afford, absolutely cannot afford, to pledge to this radio station right now, to pledge to What's at Stake, but absolutely rely on the information. So we ask you, if you've done well and you want to do something great, $400 is what we need in this moment. We have 9 minutes to do it. We can do it together. Or perhaps you're someone that says, okay, I can't do the four, but I can give $22.50 a month. I can give $22.50 a month. That's $240, which means we would exceed the goal if we have two people doing that, three people, five people. Again, whatever is in your wallet, in your heart to do, we are asking you to step up now and be in solidarity with What's at Stake and the great work that Verna does, and with WPFW, a vehicle for education, for emancipation, for joy, you know, joy. And even in, you know, Verna, what I love is when you present information, even the toughest subjects, there is still a light in your voice.
Well, we have to be able to present something to our listeners that gives them hope for the future, and where they can see how they can make a difference in all of this, because this is a critical time that we're living in. I don't think any of us have faced these kind of political conditions that we are now currently experiencing, and we have to find our way to resist and to make a difference, and to hold on to the democracy that we all know and love. But at the moment, it's slipping away, and we are witnessing that happen. Let us not forget that WPFW and Pacifica are listed in Project 2025. They actually name us. I don't know which page it's on, but they name us. So they have their sites. We are in their sites. They've targeted us. They can't just take our money because we don't get federal funding. We rely on you, the listener, to support this radio station. And now is when we need you. 202-588-9739. Go to your phone right now. Pull over if you're driving. Pull over to a safe spot. Make a contribution and then continue the rest of your day. And you'll know that you have done your part to make a difference in this at this historic moment. We also have a new app. We didn't talk about that, but WPFW has a new app that you can get. It's apps. I call it the absolutely awesome WPFW app, because it is. It really is a game changer. You can use that app and you can tune into the station from any place at any time you have your cell phone with you. So we're doing our part here. Will you please do your part? 202-588-9739 or 800-222-9739
or online at WPFWFM.org. And I think you were going to give Cash App, Verna.
I was going to do $WPFWFM. That's the Cash App. That's convenient for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
Or go online again, WPFWFM.org.
And we want to thank a friend out of Alexandria, Virginia. Thank you so much. So we're down to 375.
Thank you, Alexandria, Virginia. I know there are others. What about our friends in Washington, D.C., where I've just recently relocated to?
Right, Tacoma Park.
Tacoma Park, Silver Spring, Baltimore, Randallstown, all throughout the area. We need your support now. You know who you are. And those of you in Bowie, I know a lot of our supporters are in Bowie as well. And we're looking forward to their contributions. Some of us hear us online. We have listeners that call in from Germany, from all over the world, actually. They pick us up online. So this is the time when we need you to show your appreciation for the work that we do. Everybody can't go to the demonstrations for one reason or another. As we heard Attorney Fong mention that, you know, you may be concerned, and rightly so, that you'll be seen and they'll take... The administration is so vindictive. So we need you to go to the phones. Make a contribution. 202-588-9739. All right. That's going to do it for this week's edition of What's at Stake. Thank you to our generous listeners. You are basically our raison d'etre, reason for being. We can't do this without you. Thanks to our engineer, Michael Nasella, and my colleague, Katia Stitt. Next week, Dr. Marcia Coleman Adebayo will be in the host seat. Up next, Wake Up and Stay Woke with Dr. E. Faye Williams. I'm Verna Avery Brown, and as the late Nelson Mandela said, it always seems impossible until it's done.
The Can I Kick It outdoor summer movie series presented by Shaolin Jazz is back and is coming to Southeast DC for the first time ever. Enjoy 3 nights of martial arts and action films scored live with hip hop, soul, and more, mixed by WPFW alum DJ Two Tone Jones. Then on Saturday, October 25th, the series concludes with the screening of I'm Going to Get You Sucker at the Capitol Hill Boys Club Artist Gallery. Each event begins at 7 p.m. with a guest DJ set, followed by the movie at 8:30 p.m. Blankets and lawn chairs are welcome. For more details, visit shaolinjazz.com. shaolinjazz.com.
Good news, family. You can now take WPFW everywhere you go with our brand new WPFW radio app. Stream Jazz and Justice live, listen to archived shows, view the program schedule and playlists, donate, and more, all right from your phone. Download the WPFW radio app today from Apple App or Google Play Stores. WPFW in your pocket. Jazz and Justice wherever you are.
Hey, DC, we're reigniting the spirit of unity in our community beginning Monday, October 13th through Saturday, October 19th, by commemorating the 30th anniversary of the Million Man March and UniFest, two iconic events that shaped our history and continue to inspire our future. Events include prayer calls, a torch run, a lantern peace walk, a recommitment service, and a mini UniFest at Union Temple Baptist Church. This is an opportunity to honor the past and build bridges for a united future for our children and families, reviving the values of the Million Man March and UniFest. Details at UnionTempleDC.com.
WPFW has offered inspiring music, poignant stories, and critical journalism for over 48 years. Whether reminiscing while hearing Nina Simone or learning about the harm done due to gross global inequity, WPFW has been the soundtrack for moments of revelation, joy, sadness, and resistance. It's your generosity that allows us to continue this tradition of expansive, emancipatory excellence in community radio. We ask you to once again be in solidarity
solidarity with WPFW during our fall pledge drive by donating at WPFWFM.org and additionally from October 12th through the 25th at 800-222-9739. There is only one WPFW and only one you, the listener, who is committed to keeping independent music and message available to the people. Your generosity sustains and challenges us to build a better world, one broadcast at a time.